on and welcome today. Those live, those on the internet, those on the replay, welcome. Today is June 20th. As we talk about more principles of persuasion, negotiation, influence, and every once in a while we'll go talk a little bit about self-persuasion. A little housekeeping, of course, we were posting the recording. It usually takes 24 hours on whypersuasion.com. We will be normal next week, but we will take off the 4th of July. For those international people, that's a major holiday in the United States. So we'll take off the 4th of July, but we'll be here as scheduled next week. I'm actually trying to work on a guest presenter, but we'll see what happens there. I'll let you know as that happens. So our goal here today is spend a few minutes, give you a few tools, and then we'll talk about how to use and apply those tools. And, of course, we'll take questions throughout as we send them to me via the net, or you can ask me right over the phone. Those on the replay, of course, you just have to send me an email. There's a contact us form right by the recording. So let's get into a piece of persuasion, which is actually very different. Some people lump them together. It's what's called negotiation. The rule is always, always, always persuade first, negotiate second. There are different tools. Now, there's some overlaps within the tools, but too many people jump into negotiation too fast when they should be persuading. You see, persuasion is when you bring someone to your point of view. Negotiation, there tends to be more of a give, take, and you meet somewhere in the middle. Those are the differences between the two. For example, if you have teenagers, they want to negotiate. You're like, no, this is not a negotiation. You need to persuade them to your point of view. They want to negotiate, you know, that's a persuasive situation. There's no negotiation. You're the parent. It's time to get in persuasion mode. So I want to talk about a few keys that will help you out in the world of negotiation and, of course, of overlap with persuasion. I've done a lot of three-day events where we bring people in and we do role plays and exercises and Harvard studies and some different things that really get people in that mode, because people think they're enlightened. Man, but you put them in a negotiation situation, strange things start happening, and it gets really interesting. For example, the number one key with negotiation is preparation. I went to seminars at Harvard when they teach negotiation. They say the biggest challenge, even when you look at the government or multilateral five-country negotiations, it's preparation. Because the bottom line in a negotiation, you're going to pay with your time and preparation, or you're going to pay in lost money, lost revenue. Because in negotiation, especially you're talking about things like real estate, I mean, the right technique can make an extra $5,000 to $10,000 pretty fast. So that's the first one is, you know, be prepared. Think it through. What are the questions you need to ask? What are their needs? How can you make the pie bigger? What are some different alternatives? That type of thing. And I don't need to spend a lot of time on that. We want to go and wing it and think it through. We don't have a lot of time, but that is the first one is going to be preparation. The second one, the very important key where people hit a lot of big roadblocks, is position versus the problem. Let me explain that. Position versus the problem. Oh, if you have a headache, you take an aspirin. You have a headache, you take an aspirin. So you're going after, you're fixing the symptom versus really trying to figure out, okay, where's the headache coming from? Is it stress? Is your back out of alignment? Is it some type of sickness? We don't think those things through. So we do that negotiation. We always think price is the issue. We always think we know what it is. Let me explain this with a few stories, because this one is huge, and people don't realize it. All right. Two twin 12-year-old girls. They're fighting, starting to scream over the last orange. Right? There's one orange in the house. The two girls want it. Mom comes downstairs. What does mom do? What would we all do in that situation without thinking it through? You cut the orange in half, right? You give each girl half the orange. Whew, you solved that. But did you? So twin number one peels the orange, throws the peel away, and eats the orange. And twin number two peels the orange, throws the orange away, and uses the peel for her cooking project. You see what happened there? the position of wanting the orange, there was no questions asked versus finding, okay, what's the true issue here? What is the true problem? What's going on? And you could have really made it a better win-win by understanding one wanted the peel, one wanted the orange. Two hunters on different sides of a mountain shoot a deer, okay? So they both approach the deer. They both think it's their deer, and they fight for it. So we think, okay, we'll split it in half. Well, no, let's find out what's really going on. What is the true issue? What is the true problem? Well, if you had asked a question, and great negotiators ask more questions than the average negotiator, you'd find out one hunter wants the trophy and the other hunter wants the meat. Well, hello, it makes a big difference. Somebody comes to a car lot. I want a black Mustang. We don't have any, and they leave. Okay, they want a black Mustang. You never ask any question. Well, why do you want a black Mustang? Well, I heard that black cars get fewer tickets. Well, that's true, but it's also true with the color white. And we have three white ones over here. Let's say you have an apartment complex. I'm going to drill this one in because this one's huge. Someone comes in, I want something on the fourth floor. We don't have anything, and they walk away. Well, no. Why would you like something on the fourth floor? My friend lives there. On the fourth floor, I like to live next to them. Well, we have two available on the seventh floor. If your friend's willing to move, see how that works. So I'm coaching a student and lives in Vegas and was wanting this house. And they say they wanted $300,000 for it. People come in $280,000, $260,000, this. And it wasn't worth $300,000. It was only worth probably about $280,000. People are coming in $260,000, $280,000, $275,000. No. I said, no, you got to go in, figure out, okay, what's the true issue here? And found out that he needed to sell his house for $300,000 to pay for the home he was building. Very important to know. Found out true through the back door that he had told all his friends he's an awesome negotiator. He's going to sell his house for more than it's worth. Okay, very good to know. And Adam asked a few more questions, and I said, well, tell me about the house. What's around the yard? What's the yard? He says, well, there's a new boat, and there's a new jet ski. And I'm like, wait a minute. So basically what it came down to is he said, look, I'll give you $300,000, what you're asking for. We both know it's not quite worth that, but if I can keep the boat and the jet skis, $300,000 is yours. And took it. So saved the ego, and the boats and jet skis were worth a lot more than the difference in price, and the rest is history. Let me give you one more to hammer this one home. Someone was working on negotiating a raw piece of land. Okay, it was a raw piece of land. And it was worth, again, we'll round off some, but let's say it was worth $450,000. They were going to build some homes on it. So this gentleman was selling it, and he wanted $500. So people were coming in, and they're going on the position. Oh, I'll give you $420. I'll give you $450. I'll give you this. No, $500. Like, no. Time out. Here are the questions you need to ask. You need to find out what's going on. What is the true issue here? What is the true problem? Well, this gentleman was 60 years old, was going to retire in 5 years, and $500,000 was the exact amount he needed to finish off his retirement account. He was in no hurry. He had 5 years. He knew eventually he'd get it. Pretty important to know. And so they worked out a deal. I think it was like $50,000 down with a balloon payment of $450,000 in 5 years. Everyone was happy. Everyone got what they wanted and made it a win-win situation. So that is a huge one to really understand. Both in persuasion and negotiation is really finding that true issue, becoming consultant, asking the questions. And, you know, little things like fighting over price become a non-issue because you can really understand what they're asking for. And that's very, very important in a negotiation. The third one is you have to know your numbers. Know your numbers. What does that mean? Well, before you go in any negotiation at all, you have to have three numbers. Three numbers, and here they are. Just write down, if you're taking notes, win, W-I-N, just like winning the game. You need to have what you want, what you intend, and what you need. What you want, that's the best case scenario. This is what I want. This would be the best case. This is the number I'm going to start with. Now, truly, this is what I intend. This is what I like. And then this is what I need. this is the worst case scenario. If I don't get this, I'm walking. You have to do that before the emotions hit. What I want, what do I intend, what I need. Now understand that you need to make your number as high or as low as possible. Now our logical brain or the logical side of us says, well, that's dumb. Why don't I just give them the number that I want? Well, that would be great, but then you're not playing the game. They're coming to play the game. And you need to play the game, because if you don't play the game, bad things happen. You won't win. That's how it is. I thought that'd be great, too. Here's my number. But it doesn't work that way. In fact, I was talking to somebody who was three or four houses down. Someone was selling their home, and he didn't want to play the game. So he went there with the offer, and they thought something was wrong, something was amiss. And that's really important to understand, too, is when, let's say somebody comes to your home. You're selling a home, and they say, I'll give you $200,000 for it. One of the worst things you can do, even though that's a great number, you like it, the worst thing you can do is say, I'll take it. They're coming to play the game. They're coming to negotiate. If you accept too fast, if you accept the first offer, they're going to have buyer's remorse, and they're going to run. We've seen it time and time again. They will run. So they're coming to play. You need to play. You have to play the game. So when you come in with that number, you have to be very, very careful of the insult zone. The insult zone, if it's way, way up there, especially if you're dealing with something that's really emotional. Real estate would be in that category. Anything to do with children would be in that category. But you have to say, okay, here's the standard. This is the formula that I use. Here's how I arrive at this number. They've got to feel that you did not pull that number out of the air. And one way to do that is to make it an odd number. Don't say $200,000. Say, well, $212,406. I mean, you don't have to do cents or anything like that. That sounds like you've done your research. Well, this is my standard. This is the my standard formula to get to that number. And that's important, because when you're looking at the numbers, you have to understand that it's, first of all, that it's okay to go first in negotiation. I've told you this before, that old school negotiation schools will teach you to never make the first offer. Now, on a side note, that's true when you have no idea what the property's worth, what the product's worth, what the service's worth. But when you've done your research, you go first for two reasons. It opens the door to trust. And you're going first, because if everyone's holding their card so tight, you're not going to go anywhere in the negotiation. Second of all, it dictates the starting point of the negotiation. And that gives you power, because you've decided where that negotiation is going to start. That gives you the upper hand, and you do get a better deal. And part of that, too, is never putting everything together in the same bundle, the same package. You know, what does that mean? Well, if you say, well, here are the 12 things you get, it decreases the value. You want to separate them. We see this in infomercials. You get the Ginsu knives today. They'll say, but wait, there's more. You're going to get the Flobe. You're going to get the George Foreman grill. You're going to get this. And they're going to say, you know, it's $1,000 in value you get today for doing it. They don't put it all in one package, because it changed the value. If you put, here are the 12 things you get, it decreases the value. You separate each one. If you want to research that, it's under the law of contrast, under sweetening the pot. One of the examples I've given there is a bake sale. So the first day of the bake sale, they say, hey, today you get one cupcake and two cookies for 75 cents. They bundle it all together. Say, one cupcake, two cookies for 75 cents, and 40% of the people bought. The next day, they said, okay, today you get one cupcake for 75 cents, but, you know, wait, there's more. As a bonus, you'll get two cookies. Now, again, the logical brain says, well, duh, same thing, but it went up to 70% and increased the sale, the amount of people who bought, by 30%. We want to be logical, but we are very emotional creatures. So know your numbers, be prepared for it, and that's one of the next things that's very important in every aspect of negotiation and persuasion, is emotional mastery. You have to control your emotions. You have to understand how conflict works. Chinese proverb says, the man, of course, we'll add our woman, that strikes first admits his ideas have given out. Let me repeat that. The man that strikes first admits his ideas have given out. That means the person that lashes out at you, that gets angry, that throws verbal, hopefully not physical jabs, although that could happen, verbal insults, verbal jabs, doesn't like you, doesn't trust you anymore, gets really upset because they don't know where to go. They've run out of ideas. They've run out of tools. And things can get really emotions. And emotions can be very contagious. You have to understand how to read people's emotions. You have to understand how to deal with emotions. So the one emotion that you need to deal with right up front with any type of negotiation is anger. You have to understand how to read anger. You see a furrowed brow. I mean, try to make your face angry right now. Just, you know, your furrowed brow, your lips will curl a little bit. You need to be able to read that. Because when anger hits, the first stage of anger, blood leaves the brain. And it goes to your other muscles, you know, fight or flight, to legs and to your arms. And you don't think that as clearly. And you'll actually see them get red in the face first. It's the first sign of anger. And when that red turns white, you better be very careful because that is anger stage two. There is no blood left up there. It is gone. That's why their face looks kind of pale. And that's, you got to be very careful in that situation because that's intense anger and that's not something you really want to deal with because they're not thinking clearly. Now, as a negotiator, you have to check in your emotions at the door. You can't have two people angry at once because you're bigger than that. You, if they throw insults at you, if they make you angry, you can't let them know. If they're throwing insults, you cannot get angry. If they say something stupid or they get angry, you have to defuse it. Because sometimes when we're angry, we want to fight back, right? Someone comes at you, I'm so mad, and you know, did this, and you're like, yeah, you're right, I apologize. And you're like, don't do it again. You've diffused it, because they're looking for a fight. Now, you don't have to say that you're wrong. If they're all, if they say, well, whoa, I apologize, you know, that's not my intent. You don't have to admit you're wrong, although apology is cheap, very cheap. Hey, I'm sorry, I apologize, you know, that's my fault. Very simple. Now, our ego won't let us do that sometimes, but wow. Like, well, okay then, and then really diffuse it. Another way to diffuse anger is a distraction, a diversion. So if you can tell there's a lot of anger, maybe you can go for a walk, take a break for lunch, do something that gives them time to get the blood back in their brain. One that I've used before is going to this negotiation just to sit in and monitor it, kind of mediate it a little bit. And they both, two parties were there early before I was, and they were arguing. They were going at it. It was pretty intense. No blood in the brain. So I came up the stairs, and I expect them to see me and stop, but they kept going. They didn't even see me. And there was a box on the top of the stairs, and so I kicked it down. Da-dunk, da-dunk, okay? So they stopped. They looked at me. They looked at the box. Looked at me. Looked at the box. Just so da-dunk, da-dunk. Yeah, what's that take? 5-10 seconds? Well, that was just time to... then to stop, to catch your breath, get a little blood back in the brain, realize that they're out of control. Sometimes that's what it takes. And another thing, too, with anger, and we can go tire a lot of different emotions, but this one's the main one you need to understand, is it's a secondary emotion, meaning what people say they're angry about and really angry about many times are two very, very different things. I was talking to one of my college students, and they had a black eye. I said, what happened? He said, my roommate hit me. I'm like, why? He said, because I was eating my cereal too loud. Okay? There's the issue, then the real issue. Or when people get angry about toilet seats or where you squeeze the toothpaste, usually other issues. Okay? And so we have to just understand exactly how that works. So really understanding what this, we're talking about this fourth key here, emotions, keeping your own emotions in check. Staying in control, not showing that it's bothering you, even if it is, and reading their emotions is a big piece, and not only negotiation, but also in persuasion. So, again, remember the main thing from today, too, is you want to persuade first, but if you do get into a negotiation, you want to be able to understand that. I got a question about the difference. So that's the biggest difference. The question about the difference between persuasion, negotiation. Not only is it that negotiation you meet in the middle, another way to define it too is in persuasion, there's usually a prospect and a persuader. In negotiation, there's usually two persuaders. It's kind of the difference between the two. If you just kind of a real cut and dry definition, that's how I would do that. So what I want you to do this week as you think about these tools is I want you to think, as you're talking to people, not only listening to their position, we're talking about position versus problem, but I want you to learn to start asking questions, really dig deep. You know, if it was the oranges, well, why do you want the orange? What do you need the orange for? What is your goal with the orange? You know, if you had the twin girls, you would have found out that, well, one needed the pill and one needed it. We're too quick to assume that we know what they want. Now, you might be right most of the time, but so many times you aren't, number one. Number two, they want you to ask questions. They want you to listen. I've used this example before. If you went to a doctor's office and you're sitting on the parchment paper, the doctor opens the door and says, yep, penicillin, I'll write the prescription and shut the door. Even if the doctor was right, we'll say he was right or she was right, we'll say it. You're feeling a little violated. Doctors logically say, well, why waste my time? I know what it is. I'll just give them this prescription. That's what they came in for. That doctor would not be very persuasive to you because you did not ask the questions. All right. With that, are there any questions about what we talked about today or things that you're running into? All right. I got a question here about the emotional part. We can spend a lot of time with human emotions. It says, Kurt, what are some of the other emotions that hinder persuasion or negotiation? Well, first of all, mood matters. When you're in negotiation or persuasion and they're in a negative, foul mood, I would reschedule if you could. If you can't, your job is to get them into a better mood, because the studies show that when you're in a good mood, you recall good things, why it's going to work out, the positive things about the product or service, versus when you're in a negative mood, you recall negative things, why it won't work out, why I don't like you, oh, what about this, and they start being very nitpicky. It's a different frame of mind. And you can do that with food. It's a great way to change mood. Humor, boosting their esteem. There are ways to do that, but you have to be very careful about situation. So when we talk about emotions, that is important to know about mood. The one that you see before anger that you need to address that I'll add to the list is frustration. Frustration that's not quickly taken care of will escalate to anger. See, we should have learned a long time ago what these emotions mean. Now, let me talk about where frustration comes from. Frustration comes from an unmet expectation. Let me repeat that. Frustration, when you're frustrated with somebody or they're frustrated with you, there's some expectation, spoken or unspoken, that has not been met. So you as a persuader, as a negotiator, you need to find out, okay, what expectation is not being met? You need to find out, because if not, that will quickly turn to anger. Let me give you just a bad example before dinner. You're at a restaurant, you order the salad, and you find a large cockroach in your salad. That's a bad example. And you say, waiter, there's this thing in my salad. And the waiter says, oh, I apologize, and picks up the cockroach with his hand and walks off. My apologies, sir. I'm sorry. Okay. Now, obviously, there'll be some frustration because there's an expectation. Your expectation is, A, take the salad and get me a new one. B, it better be free. And the waiter's mind, oh, I took the bug out. What's the big deal? And so that frustration could quickly turn to anger. So that's one you need to think about. It could be the unmet expectation of the numbers you're using, or how you're negotiating, what you're doing. So that would be another emotion to take a look at when you do that. Any other questions? Let's take any questions over the phone. I've got a few email questions here for you. One's okay. It says, Kurt, you mentioned conflict. What happens with your about your emotions and conflict. Well, first of all, conflict happens when we mentioned when there's a lack of tools. It does trigger stress in the body. It does trigger frustration and anger when people don't know how to deal with conflict. And it seems like as a society, we don't deal with conflict as well as we should. I think that's why one reason lawyers get so wealthy, because they're supposed to handle the conflict for us. We don't want to deal with it. Now, sometimes you have to handle hire a lawyer, but dealing with the conflict, keeping our emotions in control, you have to understand with that the logic will not change conflict a lot of times. The logic will not change an emotion. Sometimes, for example, we talk about the emotion of fear of flying. Well, you know, the studies show and this and that, and you have all the stats. That doesn't help the person next to you on a plane. The logic, they're scared. Or with our kids, well, you shouldn't be scared. They're like, well, I am. Well, you shouldn't be sad. They're like, well, I am. So tell them how they should feel when they're feeling it doesn't help in a negotiation or with raising your children. Another question here says, Kurt, is it better to negotiate face-to-face over the phone or via the email? Well, there's pros and cons to each of those. I personally prefer my style. I like to see them face-to-face because now I can read the body. I can see their demeanor. But the reality is most negotiations, a lot of times they'll start via the email. They'll accelerate with the phone, and then they might go face-to-face. A lot of times you don't have the option. If you could choose, I would, unless it's a highly volatile emotional situation, maybe like a divorce, I would go face-to-face because you can read faces. There tends to be less deception. The challenge is you tend to get more head games. It can get emotional real fast face-to-face. Over the phone, you have a lot more breathing room. The challenge is you can't read their nonverbals. It's harder to connect with somebody over the phone, and it's easier for people to get aggressive. It's easier for me to call you a name over the phone than it is face-to-face. There are fewer filters. Versus email, the great thing about an email is that you can control your language. You can think it through, give yourself some time, have somebody else read it. That's great. But there are a lot more jabs via email. If you talk about when people say very negative, mean things, it's more versus email. It just goes face-to-face, there's not as many. There's more over the phone. There's even a lot more over the email. It's just how people are. I feel safer calling people names and where to go over email than it is face-to-face. And that's kind of how we are programmed. That was a good question. So I always prefer face-to-face. Again, unless it is so destructive and emotional and the people are going to get out of control, then you might want to do it a different way. Any other questions? I got one more here. It says, Kurt, what is the meanest trick you've seen during a negotiation? Well, I call these the dirty deeds. There's actually quite a few of them. I think I've categorized about 30 of them. The dark tricks that people say. Now, I don't talk about them so people will use them, but they're out there. I don't know the darkest. I think the deliberate ones that are deliberately trying to intimidate you, where they call you in the office, say, oh, let me make a quick phone call, and they go on for 20 minutes and laughing, and you kind of feel stupid. Then you get the really dark ones to where they put your seat in the sun. So the sun's shining on you. They turn the heat up. They give you a lot of liquid and don't take any bathroom breaks. They might order food and not give you any. The probably the one that's just, and this happens, they will put you in a chair, and this is, remember, most persuasion and influence involves a subconscious trigger feeling. They'll cut the legs off the chair about an inch each, half inch maybe, just below the notice, so you won't notice logically, but subconsciously you're feeling a little inferior. And they'll make sure they're behind a big desk and a taller chair. Again, those are really dark. People will use those. You know, things like good cop, bad cop, they're still being taught out there that are dark. I don't use them, but just be aware they're using them. And the best way to handle it, this kind of question, well, how do you handle those? I would call, if someone's using good cop, bad cop, I say, are you guys doing good cop, bad cop? Oh, no, we're not. You know, it'll kind of just neuter that situation. Why am I, and if they're sitting in the sun, move your chair. Like, why am I in a smaller chair? If they order food, go out and get your own food. I mean, just be in control, don't let it get you. It's just old school stuff that people still use. So, position versus problem this week. And I will post the recording. I'll have post it for the next 24 hours, the audio. You can post your questions there, too. Also, we're here next week, but then on 4th of July, we will not be here. Any other last-minute questions or comments? And we'll let you go for the week. Ah, you guys are easy on me. All right. So if a question you didn't want to bring up in class, just zap me through the whypersuasion.com site. That's where the recording's at. You are more than welcome to do that. Anything I can do to help you out. If you want more on the sweet in the pot, I would go to the Law of Expectations and your Magnetic Persuasion series. That will help you out. With that, everyone, have an awesome week, and we will see you same time next week. Good night, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.